We are back. You are listening to Floor Radio. I'm Dave Foster. On the line with us this morning, Frank O'Neill, the co-publisher of Floor Focus Magazine. How are you doing, Frank?
Doing great, Dave. How about you?
I'm doing great. Enjoying the summer. How about you?
I'll tell you, I'm not ready for it to end yet. It's been a great summer. You know, it's nice and 80-degree weather right here. How about you?
It's probably close to 100 degrees here.
Well, there's the difference, Dave. You got to come up here. We've got wonderful, wonderful summers. 80 degrees, perfectly blue sky. Can I sell you a piece of property here?
Yeah, right on the coast. I'll be up there shortly, right after the program's over.
Okay.
One of the things we do on this program with Frank, we talk with him every other week, and we talk about some of the events that have happened in this industry over the past week. And number one on my list, the earnings report that came out yesterday from Home Depot. The company's earnings were off by 15%. They earned $1.6 billion, or 81 cents a share. And they beat analyst estimates. Analysts were looking for 72 cents a share. The company's sales were off by 1.8% to $22.2 billion. Analysts were looking for $22.02 billion, so they missed that by a little bit. Same-store sales down by a big 5.2%.
So, yeah, nothing surprising there. Considering the way the housing market is, the way the economy is right now, Home Depot didn't do too badly. In fact, the very fact that the analysts weren't expecting them to do as well, I think, is a point to Frank Blake's success at a very difficult time to be taking over that company.
That's exactly right. And he said that he believes that this housing situation is going to go on. It's going to remain soft in the next year. And he said in the face of that, they're going to continue to invest thoughtfully, was the word he used, for the long-term health of the business.
Yeah, you know, he also mentioned that it's going to have an impact on the sale of HD Supply, which hasn't, you know, that deal hasn't been finalized yet. And maybe you can tell us what he said about that deal in his discussion about the earnings and sales for the quarter.
Well, I think what's happening, and some of the remarks that were made during the conference call, sounds like this whole thing is on shaky ground to me.
Well, yeah, good point.
And this is attached to the company's buyback program. That was a pretty massive stock buyback program. And one of the things that Blake said is there's ongoing negotiations with this whole situation, and some of the smart money seems to be thinking this thing is not going to come to pass, and I have no clue. But that if that happens, then the company would have to rethink this whole $22.5 billion stock buyback program and recapitalization program. And if this doesn't go through, then that's going to mean one of the things that Blake said is that he would look possibly to integrate this thing back into the core business.
Well, it's just at a point. I thought that Home Depot got away with one there and were able to sell HD Supply before the markets really got bad. But if that doesn't happen, he's got a real 800-pound gorilla on his hands that I'm not sure he wants to have. Well, obviously he doesn't want to have it because he did try to sell it. There are two things that are impacting, obviously, Dave. That's the tight credit market that the banks have been talking about lately. And, of course, the housing slump. I'm not sure if I were these investment bankers that I'd be wanting to risk $10 billion at this time. It's going to be a risky proposition. So, this could be a big setback for Home Depot. Also, I know you had somebody on your show. You were talking about the Armstrong situation. Again, Armstrong is going to have a very difficult time selling the company right now in this market situation. It might be 2 years before the market returns to the kind of health the strong environment, the strong investment environment that we had last year.
No question. Both very much affected. Let's take a break here, Frank. Come back, yes. And we'll wind up our conversation here on Home Depot. Frank O'Neill's with us this morning. He is the co-publisher of Floor Focus magazine. You're listening to Floor Radio, and we'll be right back. This is Floor Radio, and I'm Dave Foster. Frank O'Neill is with us this morning. We're looking back at some of the events that have happened in this business over the last 7 days. Frank, of course, has been with us for many, many years. He is co-publisher of Floor Focus magazine. We were talking about some of the news that's occurred as a result of Home Depot's second quarter earnings and the fact that this HD supply sale might not come to pass. And as you were mentioning, as we were winding up the first segment, with a tightening credit market, it's affecting not only the Home Depot HD Supply deal, but also Armstrong and probably a lot of other deals that were talked about before this credit situation began.
Exactly. I think the bet's off on acquisitions at this time, and the whole I hate to be pessimistic, but the chances of a recovery in the housing market could be a long way off. And of course, it's going to be, it very much depends on what part of the country we're talking about, how quickly we go through a recovery. One thing that people haven't been talking much about was the fact that this housing upsurge that we saw, this housing boom that we saw in the past 5 years, was 90% higher than any other housing boom we've ever had in history, and that's if you average the dollar over the course of the last 100 years. 90% higher it went up, so it has a lot further way down to go, you would assume, than any previous housing slump. And I think the people who are going to get hurt the most, Dave, are going to be the folks in Miami and Florida and maybe California who are flipping houses and trying to make money on flipping houses. And of course, the people who the poor people who didn't have good credit and bought subprime mortgages, those are the people who are going to have the hardest time. And I would say, we're talking about markets, vacation markets, and markets with people who are not poverty stricken, but people who are moving up from a lower income to a middle class income. Those are going to be the markets that have those kinds of demographic profiles are going to be hit really hard.
Yeah, well, there's no question that the speculators are out of the market for sure now.
I believe
Or if they're not, they wish they were.
That's right.
And another thing that's happened since we talked last is the National Association of Realtors have once again lowered their expectations for the housing market. This is the 6 months in a row they've done that.
Yeah.
Adjusting it since I think six months ago, and I think they were predicting good things to happen, and we had hit the bottom back as far as October and November of last year. So a lot of people really missed the mark on their expectation for the housing market, and we've had several on this program that have said that they don't think they're going to see a real upturn until the latter part of 2009.
I wouldn't be surprised. Not to end this on a downbeat note, I think the wild card in this is going to be the euro and the people, the investors that we've had from Europe who have really instilled a lot of capital into the U.S. Marketplace. Are they going to be able to hold up their end of the bargain when it comes to paying off loans that they have on houses in the United States. You know, we'll have to stay tuned for that part of the equation. If they do, well, this could be a much shorter downturn than some people are expecting.
Well, it's it'll be interesting to find out, and I guess we will know as we go forward on this. But the more people I listen to now, the more are pessimistic, a whole lot more pessimistic than they were six months ago.
Absolutely.
So we'll just have to see what happens going forward. Let's take a break here. I'm going to come back and talk about another earnings report that was made since we talked last, and that would be with Congolium. They reported after close of market last Friday. Let's take a break here. We'll be right back. Frank O'Neill's with us, a co-publisher of Floor Focus magazine. This is Floor Radio. This is Floor Radio, and I'm Dave Foster. Frank O'Neill is on the line with us this morning, the co-publisher of Floor Focus magazine. We're looking back at some of the events over the last 7 days, one of which was Congolium reported their second quarter earnings. Earnings were up by 33% to $835,000. Net income per share was 10 cents as opposed to 8 cents a share in the year-ago period. Sales down by 2%. To $57.5 million, and I guess all things considered, that wasn't altogether a bad quarter for the company.
Yeah, considering the conversation that we just ended,
yeah.
They're doing pretty good.
Well, one of the things that they said too was that basically their three major markets, which are the remodeling market, the new residential housing market, and the manufactured housing markets, are not doing all that well.
Well, the only one of those markets I would want to be in right now is remodeling. There, you know, I think that's still going to be okay. Maybe not as healthy as it was last year, but I wouldn't want to be in the manufactured housing or the new home sales business.
Well, that's a good place to be, out of both of those.
Right.
And, of course, we still have the Chapter 11 ongoing situation at Congolium, which we will watch and report on. Let me change the subject here. Get another item in here. Shaw Industries has mentioned that they have just hired on a sustainability and environmental VP, environmental affairs VP. His name is Rick Ramirez, and that's a newly created position. It's actually VP of Sustainability and Environmental Affairs.
Well, obviously, they're taking the sustainability movement very, very seriously. And, you know, Shaw has a terrific green program, and it's one of the few companies right now, in fact, the only major player that's, well, I shouldn't say that. Let me go back to the first statement. It's one of the few companies to have an environmental program that crosses both from the commercial side of the business into their residential side of their business. And as you know, Dave, they just started their they're going to have recycled content in all their ANSO residential products going forward, and you know, it's a sign of change, I think, in the consumer world, that people are finally becoming more and more aware of the environment and trying to do their part for creating a cleaner environment.
I think that's true, and you know, I think more and more as I look into this thing, that companies like Shaw and others see that this is just good business, and if it helps the environment, that's good too. But I think number one, above all, first, last, and always, it's good business.
Well, you're exactly right, and the one thing I've always been proud of the floor covering industry is, and certainly the carpet manufacturers, is that their proactive position when it comes to protecting the environment. definitely at the forefront of American industry in that, and you know, I'm really proud of our industry, and you know, it's going to, I mean, it goes to not only keeping the our environment cleaner, but also freeing us from dependence on Middle Eastern oil.
I think you're exactly right. Getting back to Mr. Ramirez, Rick Ramirez, he comes from Celanese. If you're old enough, you can remember them back in the floor covering business.
That's right. That's right. They were out of the floor covering business in what, the 70s, I guess, huh? Dave, you're really showing your age here.
Well, I was told that. I read this someplace. I certainly didn't know that firsthand. It also sounds
you were in grammar school.
I was in no. I was in kindergarten. Also, Rick Ramirez looks like he's from New York as well. At least he has a degree from NYU, so maybe he's one of your old buddies there.
he's a New Yorker. That's good. Okay,
Let's take a break here. I'm going to change the subject when we come back. Frank O'Neill's with us, co-publisher of Floor Focus magazine. You're listening to Floor Radio, and we'll be right back after these messages. This is Floor Radio, and I'm Dave Foster. We have Frank O'Neill on the line this morning, the co-publisher of Floor Focus magazine. We're reviewing some of the events that have happened in this business over the last 7 days, one of which was an interesting announcement that came from Millikan Carpet this past week. They have launched a program they're calling Stimulus, and they're calling it an entirely new way to achieve floorscapes of seemingly infinite variety, while also eliminating design lines and pattern repeats. And what this is, evidently, and I don't know that I fully understand it, perhaps you do, it's like an addition to the Millitron, the digital color placement capacity that they have with the Millitron.
Well, it sounds like, you know, they gave some example. They're going to have four styles that are going to be open to this stimulus process. And what they're doing, as far as I can tell, Dave, is adding a new random design over an existing design.
Right.
So you can, you know, you're actually putting design within a design. So you can either imagine yourself as a designer and you want, you like X pattern. For example, Blip, one of the patterns that they're doing this process on, but you'd like a little more contrast in it. You'd like a little more. You'd like it slightly different. They put this stimulation process, and then you get a new style that has seven color options, and you know, you're on to a whole different thing.
Now, one of the things in the press release that they sent discussing this, it said that this extends the concept of pattern beyond the boundaries of a single carpet tile.
Not sure what that means.
I'm not sure what that means, but I was hoping you did.
Well, you know, I think the bottom line here is that out of these four styles that they're going to use this new stimulus process on, they're going to be able to create 34 designs and quote, unlimited possibility. So, you know, it just gives the designer a heck of a lot more flexibility than he or she has had in the past.
Exactly right. Well, we're going to have to get somebody on this program to talk a little bit about that so we can understand that.
Good idea.
Another mill with something new happening, Beaulieu, getting into the recycled content business. They will be. They will now have all of their. Now this is Beaulieu commercial, I should say.
Right.
They will now have recycled content in all of the product produced by the units of Beaulieu commercial.
Yeah. The Beaulieu commercial has had recycled content for quite some time now, but not in 100% of their products. And, you know, they have three brands, Cambridge Commercial, Beaulieu Contract, and the newest brand is Aqua Hospitality Carpets. And, you know, in 2005, they introduced Nextera, which is a very interesting carpet tile backing that contains 85% post-consumer recycled content. So that, you know, that will be used on all their products, all their tile products going forward. And they're going to have some, at least some recycled content in all their broadloom as well.
I thought it was interesting, this Nextera. The recycled content is PET, PET from plastic soda bottles, and the rest of it is recycled glass, which they say comes from either windshields or light bulbs or who knows what else.
Yeah, that, you know, Tandis is also using, well, they're using an element of windshields.
Right, exactly. The layer, the layer in the middle.
Yeah,
between the laminates.
I can't remember the chemical name for that layer, but it sounds like automobile windshields are getting a good bit of recycling, which is great.
Well, evidently, according to the way, if my recollection is correct, that the glass has already, you know, was already being recycled, and this middle layer, the item in the sandwich, was not. So evidently, there's lots of this stuff available, I guess.
Yeah, it sounds like it, and it's going to a good use.
And that may be, well, what they're talking about here. I don't know. But
anyway,
you know, hats off to Beaulieu, Beaulieu Commercial for this.
Yeah, this talk about, you know, these two items that we just spoke about with green movements, I have a hunch that in the next year we're going to see a big quantum leap in awareness of environmental products throughout our society.
No question about it. No question about it. Let's take a break here, Frank. Frank O'Neill is with us this morning. He is co-publisher of Floor Focus magazine. We're looking back at the week in the floor covering industry. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. This is Floor Radio. This is Floor Radio, and I'm Dave Foster. We have Frank O'Neill on the line this morning, the co-publisher of Floor Focus magazine. We're reviewing the week in this business, and one more item that happened that I thought was pretty interesting. This was just announced yesterday. J.J. Haynes, a distributor out of Baltimore, has made an acquisition. They have just acquired Wheeler. That's an Orlando-based distributor with sales of about, I don't know, $45 to $50 million. Pretty interesting.
Very interesting. J.J. Haynes has turned into a real big player in the distribution business. In fact, I would say right now it's probably hot on the heels of Hoboken as the largest distributor in the United States right now. This is a company we have to keep our eyes on. It'll be interesting to see if we have more consolidation in the distribution end of the business. But distribution has changed a lot in recent years. And you know, one of these, we've talked about it before, some of the changes. And I suppose we should probably talk about it again in one of our upcoming programs.
Well, I'm just wondering if this doesn't really turn the heat up. I mean, I'm wondering if distributors feel, for the most part, or at least a lot of them feel, that they have to really, I don't know, expand or die, make acquisitions, expand geographically, or I guess you just can't stay where you are.
Now that you brought it up, I guess, I think that A distributor the size of Wheeler in the $45 to $50 million range, which is a medium-sized distributor, those distributors are probably going to have more and more difficulty going along. I think the ones that are going to fare the best are small specialty distributors who don't have a lot of competition, and very big guys who have economy of scale, like J.J. Haynes. So, it's the world is changing out there, and we're going to see more big guys and more small guys, and I think less in the middle.
Well, you know, I can remember not so long ago, people were saying, well, the distributor's dead. Then, oh, that was
Isn't
10
that
years ago or even longer. I'm not sure. But obviously, they're still there. And they still, you know, a lot of these are pretty healthy organizations.
Well, a lot of resourceful guys out there who have found new ways to keep the ball in the air. And, you know, my hat's off to the distributors of this country. I think, you know, I think they're probably... The interesting part of it is that the successful distributors are probably making more money now than they did 5-10 years ago.
Of course, there's another element involved here, too, that we didn't have 10 years ago, and that's a lot of the hard surface imports that are coming from Asia and other places.
Yep, you're exactly right. And a lot of, you know, the most resourceful American distributors are involved in that business.
Oh, exactly right, as is some of the larger, in fact, most of the larger and some of the smaller retailers, for that matter.
Yes, indeed. You know, that's a whole other story, having retailers buying direct from China and other countries and having organizations buying direct from other countries. You know, a good point, a good case for that is CCA Global.
Buying direct
a lot of their product.
Exactly right. Let's pause here. I'm going to change the subject yet again with yet again another break. Frank O'Neill's with us this morning. He is the co-publisher of Floor Focus magazine. We'll be right back. Stay with us. This is Floor Radio. This is Floor Radio, and I'm Dave Foster. We have Frank O'Neill on the line this morning, the co-publisher of Floor Focus magazine. We're reviewing the week in the floor covering business. And in the news, once again, Jack Mishkin. J. Mish is his company, and he's just setting up shop in scenic Cartersville, Georgia.
That's right. Jack has had, for those of you who don't know who Jack Mishkin is, he's really one of the premier designer of commercial carpets in our business. He was one of the founders of Bentley Mills and was a partner in Monterey Carpets before that company was sold to Tandis. And 3 years ago, he made the leap into the residential market, which, if you ask me, that's a big leap. The residential floor covering business is very different than the commercial business, but he founded J. Mish, which is makes high-end, it's a boutique business that makes high-end wool carpets. He also has taken over the Prince Street House and Home brand of Bentley Prince Street, which makes tufted, high-end tufted designs. And you know, Jack has done so well that he's gone out and acquired a manufacturing operation. So I find that very interesting.
We'll have to go down and talk to him as well. I was talking about having somebody from Millikan on this program. I'll have to invite Jack back on this program. It's been a long time.
Well, absolutely. You know, he's certainly one of the most interesting guys in our business, and I think he'll have a lot to say. I think that would be a great interview.
Yeah, now that he's right down the road from us.
That's right.
One more thing I wanted to mention, and I know several weeks ago we talked about iFloor, and they've been opening stores all over the place. They just opened their 32nd store. It's in California. And they also said that they have just, they have announced that they have reached their 500,000th customer.
Yeah, you know, iFloor is an interesting company. I think if I had a blueprint for the perfect retail floor covering business, it would be 50% internet sales and 50% bricks and mortar. And The guys, it's Steve, what's Steve's last
Steve
name?
Steve Simonson.
Steve Simonson, who is the owner of iFloors, former retailer in Washington State, a former bricks and mortar retailer in Washington State.
Because he's still a retailer,
Yeah. Well, he started iFloors, and you know, now he's building it into a combination of internet and bricks and mortar. I find that a very interesting way to do business.
And they just closed a funding deal where they have another $7.5 million, which they say will enable the company to open 10 more stores before the end of the year.
Yeah. This is, to me, all you retailers who are listening, this is the floor covering business of the future right now.
that's exactly right. And they've not been... I can't remember exactly what year it was that they opened their first retail store, but they've kicked this thing into gear this year.
You know, it isn't that many years ago. I want to say 3 years ago.
Oh, no, it's not. And in fact, there's an interesting interview that we did, I think it was last month, with Steve Simonson about the growth of this organization. It's in the archives on the floordaily.net website.
Uh-huh.
And if somebody wants to learn more about this, I encourage them to check that out. And as I mentioned, they've got they just opened their 32nd store, and they say they're going to open 10 more before the next year or before
the
year is out.
The latest stores are where, Dave?
The latest stores are in Rockland, California, and they opened one in Brooklyn, New York, of course, Concord,
of
California,
that.
And in Washington, in Bellevue and Everett.
Okay, all right.
And,
very interesting.
And they're also, also another thing that I thought was interesting here, they said they've completed their 3,000th project in their installation pilot program.
Uh-huh.
Offering installation services to their customers.
Yeah, that's another aspect of the iFloor business, which a lot of internet flooring businesses don't offer installation to potential customers. And you know, that's been I think probably you could say one of the negatives of selling online, that you know, once you buy a product online, it's you know, your responsibility to go and find your own installer. So it's basically a do-it-yourself business. Now, you know, internet floor covering sales don't yet make up a big part of our business. I would say less than 3% of total sales, considerably less than 3% of total sales. But again, I would say this is something that I think all retailers should be looking at.
Well, I think with these brick-and-mortar operations around the country, that is no doubt going to increase iFloor's installation aspect of the business.
Yeah. How big are they now? Do you have any idea?
In terms of sales? No, don't know.
Yeah. Getting pretty big, I would say.
Oh, there's no question. One thing they did say, too, is that the registered users on their site have increased on a year-over-year basis by 40%. So, I mean,
they've
always been the largest. And we're running out of time, but one more thing. We were talking about retailers in the growth mode. Floor & Decor has just opened up its first operation. Floor & Decor Outlets of America just opened up its first operation on the West Coast. It's in Norco, California, which is somewhere between San Diego and L.A. And this is their 23rd store, and I'm sure we're going to be seeing a lot more stores open here before all is said and done.
Another interesting company, one that, you know, I know we're going to be talking a lot about them going forward.
You've got that right. And on that note, Frank, we're out of time, unfortunately.
Well, it's always good to talk to you, Dave, and enjoy the nice weather down there, and I'll talk to you in a little while.
You got it. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Sounds great.
We've been talking with Frank O'Neill, the co-publisher of Floor Focus magazine, and you're listening to Floor Radio.